This is Sexploration with Monica. It's Friday night, 8 o'clock. So tonight's show is going to be a very exciting show. We're talking about female ejaculation. Tallulah Sulis, she's the Sexploration with Monica resident squirt spurt. She's actually on a dinner cruise right now. And so we're going to like call her on the ship.
Wow.
Yeah,
technology
exactly.
Is amazing.
It is. It's wonderful. I love the future that we're living in right now. We also are going to be talking about Tantra, opening up the heart, creating a sacred space for sexuality with Evelina Rose. And then we're going to talk to the author of Soul Laundry. She wrote this epic travelogue that's kind of like a murder mystery and also a story of sexual awakening. Right now on the phone, we have Tallulah Sulis. She's the director and producer of the film Divine Nectar. And tomorrow she has a new project that she's working on. It's called Tallulah, is it Female Liquid Orgasm?
Yes.
And it's basically a how-to about female ejaculation.
Yes. It's basically a compilation of a lot of my life's work. It has audio interviews, it has ebooks, it has video tutorials, toy guides, and it's all about female ejaculation and the G-spot and how, particularly how men, or it could also just be for partners of women that want to go to that next level and really take it to the next level.
And some people have really found this controversial.
Absolutely. This is a controversial subject in part because ignorance surrounding it or just
some people think it's pee, or some people don't believe that it is possible for women to ejaculate.
And that's why I love teaching about it so much, is because you get to bring awareness about this topic that is shrouded in controversy, myths, and disbelief, and turn into something that is actually very doable. It's something that brings a whole new level of energy and intimacy into a relationship, and it's just very empowering once you learn about it and learn that your body is capable of this.
Well, what I love about your work, I mean, I learned to ejaculate with Tallulah's work. So when she and I first met, I was like, oh, I have a radio show about sex. She's like, oh, I'm an expert in female ejaculation. And I was like, oh, really? I heard that was possible, but I didn't know for sure. And it seemed like, well, was it one of those parlor tricks? You know, is it something that they have a little bag of water in there and they squeeze it out? Or what's, you know, what's going on there? And I saw the video Divine Nectar and really seeing it for myself, these women having these incredible looking orgasms, just really expressive and intense. And then I really found that with a partner and now by myself also that I'm able to ejaculate. And that's just crazy. It's just amazing. You know, it's such a gift.
Yeah, it's so exhilarating to experience it for the first time and then to keep at it and just keep like having this as part of like your sexual repertoire. And, you know, and I don't want to put pressure on people and people to feel like they have to learn this or that this is experience they need to have in order to be complete. But it is something I think that just everyone should learn about. Educate yourself, read all you can about it, and chances are in the process of maybe learning about female ejaculation, you'll stumble into some other amazing things, such as getting in touch with your G-spot and finding that every woman does have a G-spot and stimulating it and learning about the journey towards working with female ejaculation and just getting to know your body on a deeper level and also working with surrendering and letting go. And that's kind of a tough one, you know, for
sure.
Some women.
And as you go deeper, like as you play with your G-spot, you're always building more sensation.
Yes, and that's what's so amazing about G-spot in particular, as well as other parts of the body too, is that we can awaken sensation in pretty much any part of the body when we focus our attention on it and we stimulate it and we work with it, and we also overcome any blockages we have in that particular area. And a lot of women don't, right when they first start working with their G-spot, some women don't have a ton of sensation there. In fact, it can be numb, it can feel like pressure, could feel like even painful for some women. But I definitely encourage women out there to keep working with their G-spots, even if it doesn't really feel like much. You can actually awaken sensation there, and I've actually awakened sensation in my G-spot. And I started out with a somewhat sensitive G-spot, but not anything like really thrilling or amazing. And then through like over time, now it's like almost an inherent part of the stimulation that I have in a sexual experience, whether it's with myself or with a partner, how it's become so sensitized.
Is your G-spot now more sensitive even when you're having traditional penis-vagina intercourse?
Yes, and that's what's so cool is I'm also, because I know where it is and I'm sensitive to it, then I can also work with different positions. So regular P and V positions, I can transform into these amazing, very heightened sensation kind of experiences, whereas before it was like, oh, you know, sex is great and fun and, you know, penetration is great. But now penetration can be like amazing and orgasmic, and it's completely put an entire new experience to intercourse for me, because I know how to move my body in a certain way. I know certain positions that really access the G-spot. My partner also knows where my G-spot is and actually will work specifically trying to angle towards my G-spot and work with that on different levels. So that's pretty exciting too, to just have a whole new dimension of intercourse and be more sensitized.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Yeah, because a lot of women will have more orgasms during, you know, oral sex or manual stimulation or through toys or a vibrator. And intercourse for some women just really doesn't do it for them, you know, partly because their G-spot is not fully awakened and they're not knowing the certain positions that really hit the good spots.
And it's not just an intellectual education, it's a physical, like a somatic education. You're learning your own body and your body is learning its pleasure.
Yeah, something that I definitely think women should master for themselves too, even if they have a partner and they're practicing with their partner. Being able to have this experience with yourself and really own it for yourself and really working with your G-spot and using G-spot toys and getting more in touch with that on your own level, I think is also really valuable, because that way your experience doesn't leave if the partner leaves,
right.
You know, and you can really like have that experience forever.
Once
the floodgates have opened, they're open.
Right.
This is, I have a comment.
Please.
I'm the token straight guy for
this
show tonight,
rock
and roll nurse. And
hi,
nice to talk
to
you.
So he's also a nurse, in addition to bringing us punk music that has sex themed.
Yes, but
that's awesome.
But
yeah.
I have to say, as a nurse, I know almost nothing about the female body. Like in my nursing training, they really don't teach much at all, and I think that's a real problem with the profession in general. Mm-hmm. And there's this myth that it's with sex, you just know how to do it. You know, your
right.
body will tell you how to do it. No, don't read any books, because that's going to mess you up or something.
Right. Or it'll make you dirty.
Or, yeah, it's you know, or then you're admitting that you don't know how to do it, and that's shameful.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I actually like see clients for coaching. And I actually had this one male client the other day who he said, you know, I actually have always my entire life thought that sex was just kind of based upon animal instinct, and you wouldn't really talk about it, you wouldn't really explore it, you just kind of do it. The reality is that the more you can be educated about it, that opens up like huge doors for, like, as a deeper intimacy, knowing about yourself, being more empowered, walking the world in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it deepens your relationship with your partner, because you're able to communicate about what they like and what you like. And it also deepens your relationship with yourself and your own sexuality. I think sex becomes so much better when you communicate about it.
One of the things that I encourage for my clients is to actually have two different types of sessions, actually, with, especially if they're working with a partner. One is an exploratory session where it's just about one person totally receiving. And then the whole purpose of that session is literally to learn each other's erotic maps, or learn that person's erotic map. So you're in that session saying, okay, we're just going to explore. I want to learn more about your body, and I want to learn more about what turns you on. So I'm just going to try different things. And what I want you to do is just tell me if this feels good or that feels good, and we're just going to experiment and explore. And that way, when you're in the heat of the moment and you're having your other type of session where you're just going for it, then you have that exploratory session in your arsenal of knowledge, and you know their erotic map a little bit better. And then you can just really be more confident when you are in a more spontaneous kind of experience with that person. But I really think it's so important to put aside time and create like a whole ritual of it. And it's really amazing, because it gives the person who's receiving permission to be able to communicate, oh, I liked what you were doing before, or like, oh no, can you try what you were, that other move? I really like that. Or that doesn't do much for me. And then the person's like, okay, how about this? Do you like that? And then you get to this point where it creates this openness that you couldn't really have when you're in the heat of the moment. So having that exploratory session is so key.
Right. A communication session.
Yes. It's so liberating. It really is.
So I want to direct people to your work. They can actually get to it through my website. SexplorationWithMonica.com has a little banner on it right now that says The Truth About Squirting Orgasms. Mm-hmm. And you just click on that and it'll take you to female liquid orgasms. And you're giving away a bunch of informational and audio, and you can watch a woman squirting and actually see what it looks like in real life. It's maybe a little bit erotic, but it's really informational, and it's not like salacious in any way. It's just like, oh, that's what it looks like.
Yes, it's tasteful and it's educational, and it could be offensive to some people, but really the goal of it is I really see a lot of value in people seeing what it looks like, because a lot of people imagine it in totally different ways, or some people, you know, have these vague conceptions of it. So it's really great to just see it for educational purposes. So I'm giving away these audio tutorials, free audio, like interviews, and a free like mini ebook. So if you go to Monica's site, you can find it all there. And during this particular weekend, the product is normally $197. We're running a special promotion right now during this launch where it's $100 off, but I think it's just for this week. So
go to sexplorationwithmonica.com and look for The Truth About Squirting Orgasms, and you'll see this woman's face. She looks like she's about ready to have a very erotic sneeze.
Yes.
she's like, oh, I'm so lovely, and something very exciting is about to happen. So look for The Truth About Squirting Orgasms at sexplorationwithmonica.com. Thank you so much, Tallulah, for coming on Sexploration with Monica. I'll let you get back to your dinner cruise.
Thank you. I'm in the bathroom, by the way, at the dinner cruise. Awesome.
Well,
it's been a pleasure, as always, Miss Monica. I love you.
Oh, I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Thanks, Tallulah.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye.
So coming up in the show, we'll be talking to Evelina Rose about Tantra, her website, lovejourneytantra.com. Later in the show, we'll be talking to the author of Soul Laundering about a sexual awakening, a murder mystery. It's a very exciting story. This is Sexploration with Monica. FCC Free Radio. This is Sexploration with Monica on San Francisco's alternative radio. It's been an interesting show. We've talked about female ejaculation, bondage. In just a few moments, we're going to be talking about sexual awakenings. My token strike by the rock and roll nurse.
Hello.
And right now, we're going to be talking about Tantra. Evelina Rose is a very experienced Tantra teacher. Your work is all about deepening into your sexuality, really working on your connection with your partner, or even with just the person who is in front of you in the moment. It's really about your connection to your body and the moment. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. It's about deep presence in the moment, really dropping into the fullness of the moment.
And you're doing a series of workshops, some of them at Good Vibrations and near where you live in Sebastopol. And you've got some really exciting things coming up. Why don't you tell us about some of your classes that are coming up next week?
Next weekend, I have two workshops in San Francisco. One is for women, one is for men and women. Saturday is women only. And it's called Deepening into Sacred Love. So it's a deeper exploration of Tantra that includes learning the breath work that moves Kundalini through the body, helps create ecstatic states, and also learning intimate communication, learning more about how to be in your erotic energy, and in some very deep interchanges with other people that allow you to experience the power of this path to create intimacy.
So, Evelina, in one of our first interviews, you taught me something really powerful about how to communicate with a lover. And perhaps the rock and roll nurse can relate with me on this. Sometimes I really have trouble communicating what I want because I'm worried that I'm going to hurt the other person's feelings. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
It's really hard. You know, you like something, you like someone, but you're not really feeling what they're doing right now. So how do you say something?
And vice versa. I feel like I get a little hurt when I'm told that doesn't feel good. Sometimes in the heat of the moment, it's not necessarily told with the most tactful words.
Right. There's got to be a better way.
There are better ways. And I think the lack of tact comes from waiting too long to say something.
Mm.
And what we learn, what we teach is how to say things in a very positive way. We speak of it as being above the line being neutral, and above the line being ways of building self-esteem. So it might be to say something positive first. I really love how you're touching me. Or if you don't, you say, I love that you're touching me. And I wonder if you could do that more slowly, even more slowly still. Oh, yes, that's it. So we call it positive request reward. Starting with, the other way to say it is a love sandwich, starting with something loving, making your request, and something loving. So both people feel honored and treasured in the process. I think so often we say what we don't want, or if we say what we want, we don't let the other person know that we actually got it. So the last part is, oh, yes, or thank you, I really appreciate you slowing down.
Mm-hmm, that positive reinforcement that really can make someone feel loved and feel good.
That's right. That way both people win, because it feels like you're being received, and even the request is an honoring. I say that when you don't ask for what you want and you just grin and bear it, you're actually dishonoring the other person, because the subliminal communication is, I imagine you're the kind of person who wouldn't want to please me even if you knew how. And when you ask, when you make requests, the subliminal communication is, I imagine you're the kind of person who'd love to please me if I let you know what pleases me. So it actually honors the person. We have it upside down. We think that we might hurt someone's feelings, but that's by not speaking until we just can't stand it anymore.
Right.
And then saying what we don't want.
Right.
And what I find is you can kind of guide the process with your words in a way that you just keep finding that groove that works for both people.
Another thing that I really love about your work is the connection to the body and the connection to breath and the way that all feeds into this moment of presence and how to be more present and how to be more present with the sensations on your body, as using sexuality as a meditation of being more present, you know, to be more in the moment.
Tantra actually uses the breath as a means to enlightenment, and it uses intimacy as a means to enlightenment. So it's with the breath, you're learning how to come into your own center and how to receive the other person from your center. What we find is if both people come into their center and sit in their heart and let their heart expand, then you're both really present to receive, and both people feel received. So often we're busy trying to give, but we really want to be received and seen.
Exactly, yeah, and have it be a way to communicate with your partner in the moment, you know, that you see them, and give them the opportunity to really see you with your pleasure, with your vulnerability, and with what you really want.
That's right. We imagine that each person represents a divine beloved. And so when you're looking into those eyes, you, especially in the rituals, you imagine you're looking into the eyes of the divine. And since there's only one being, we really are. So it brings your very best forward. It allows you to see the mirror reflecting your divinity, your highest energy. And then both people just keep going deeper and opening more, and it gets very expansive and very fulfilling.
It sounds like one of the skills to learn is how to slow things down, because it doesn't sound like this is, you can have a tantric quickie.
Can you have a tantric quickie? Maybe, well, you can, though. Maybe high advanced level,
yeah,
tantric quickie.
Maybe if you've worked to the point where you're so,
to really be present, though,
so comfortable with it that it comes naturally. But it sounds like at least in my case, it would take a lot of work to get to start to incorporate
a lot of presence,
a lot of presence, and a lot of mindfulness.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does take work. It's a spiritual path. It takes practice. That's why they call them practices. Mm-hmm. And you're right. You really learn to slow things down, to take time to enjoy what's in front of you in the moment, to imbibe your experience. There's this wonderful word for the in-breath, which is inspiration. So when you're breathing in, you're inspiring your experience. You're taking it into your body and actually having the experience. So it tends to be much, much slower. And a tantra date may go hours because you enter into that timelessness and spacelessness, and there's just nowhere to go but here. But in answer to your other question, is there such a thing as a tantra quickie? There is. Once two people have really learned to move the kundalini in the body, sometimes standing in the kitchen, you can look at each other and each take a breath, and the kundalini rushes up through the body.
Oh, that's so awesome.
It is, actually.
So I want to let you get back to your date, because she's out on a date tonight. So I want to, you know, honor that and set you free soon. But you have a lot of interesting stuff going on that people can explore here in the city. You have some stuff going on at Good Vibrations. And also you're doing individualized sessions. So I want to make sure that we talk about that, too, and give people an opportunity to connect with your work.
Thank you. Next Friday, the 24th, I'll be doing sessions in San Francisco, and I do them from my home, and I also do them long distance a lot. So it can be an individualized session in learning Tantra. I also work with couples and help couples learn this path and deepen in their practice, learn to how really how to move the kundalini in their body. And I'm a therapist. I call it meta-therapy, which is therapy with a very strong spiritual, metaphysical component, because I feel we can all get in touch with our spiritual resources and use them to transform our life.
.com. There's that class coming up at Good Vibrations. You can Google them and find out more about Evelina Rose and her work in sacred tantra. Thank you so much, Evelina.
You're welcome.
Okay, have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. I will.
Mm-hmm. Now joining us is Ishtar Rising. Welcome to Sixploration with Monica.
Hello.
Hello. So we've been talking a lot about ways that we need to be healed and ways to heal ourselves. And sexuality can be a way of both being healed and a way of... I almost feel like rape isn't really about sexuality. It's about mm-hmm. power. But I think it kind of gets lumped in and then people get really triggered. And you wrote this very interesting book called Soul Laundering. It's definitely an epic travelogue. You're all over the globe, Tibet, Alaska, China, the Rockies. I was reading and I'm like, oh my God, she's talking about the BART. You're in San Francisco. So you really go all over the place with this story. Where did this story come from?
It came from a lot of things. Part of it comes from some personal history. I did have a relative who was raped and murdered in my past, and I became obsessed with that story as a teenager mm-hmm. when I found out about it, because it was very much sort of hidden away like a dirty little secret.
Mm-hmm. No one wanted to talk about it. No one could face it at all. Then you're like, why don't they want to talk about it?
I thought she died of cancer.
Right.
You know, it was like, as I got older and I was continuing to be obsessed with it. I mm-hmm. didn't know what it had to do with me, really, but more events happened in my life. I was raped about 7 or 8 years ago, and so I was dealing with that issue, right. but I didn't really see the connections in the two, even though I was, you know, right. all wrapped up in that story. And so a lot of it is me using a number of stories from a number of people and a number of things to tell my story, mm-hmm. but also to talk about sexuality in general in an as open and frank a way that I could, and to use the characters to discuss stuff that people don't talk about.
Right.
So
your story, this story in Soul Laundering, it has a lot of different elements. So, you know, it's a lot about traveling, it's a lot about sexuality, and then it's a lot about this murder mystery where this innocent young girl is raped and murdered, and then it talks a lot about your family's reaction to the murder, and then also some insights into their own experience of their sexuality. Like you're talking about your Aunt Sharon's list of fears, it's on page 111, which I think is a nice symbol. You said that she felt guilty as if she'd done something wrong because she, you know, in adolescence grew breasts. And so she's like, you know, women must be dirty, women's bodies must be something to feel guilty about. And you'll see that when people talk about rape, you know, they'll say, oh, well, you know, what did she do? Like, oh, she was raped. Well, what was she Did she go into his bedroom at night? Was she drunk? Was she wearing some sort of outfit? You know, what did she do to bring the rape on herself?
Mm-hmm. When I was doing some research for the book, one of the things I did was look up online to see just some stats, because I had no idea what the real numbers were. And one of the things I ran across was an Amnesty International interview, or
a poll?
A poll, yes. Mm-hmm. And basically they determined that a third of all people that they had polled felt that women were to blame themselves if they had been drunk, flirting, or wearing revealing clothing.
Right.
And I mean, just my reaction, even like 8 years post, my immediate reaction was tears came by my eyes, thinking, oh, that means I'm this dirty, responsible person for what happened to me. You know?
Exactly.
That's outrageous. I can't think of any other crime where the victim is made to feel like a perpetrator.
Mm-hmm. And the victim always goes on the stand, and you know, at rape cases. And
the legal system is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it more rarely often than not, the people who were the perpetrators end up getting money out of it. It's, if you read into it, it's
right.
I think a woman gets raped in this country every 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and obviously there's men that get raped too. It's not.
Absolutely.
Theirs is even more kept under wraps because
of they can't
the embarrassment
talk about it
and all that.
Let's really deconstruct this idea where there's no one responsible for a rape other than the rapist. You know, if someone says no to a sex act, you know, it doesn't matter how turned on you are or your relationship to that person, or if that person is your wife or a sex worker, you know, no means that person's not on page with what you're doing. So sex is about pleasure. That person's not going to have pleasure with what you're doing. So, hey, that means the sex act is over. And then if something continues, it's about power, you know, and it's not okay. So as you kind of go through this journey, what made you notice that these ideas weren't okay and weren't, you know, weren't nourishing you?
I'd say one of the things that I notice in our culture is that the things that we're brought up to believe and know have to do with a lot of words and contracts, you know, marriage contract, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's like you become property of each other, mm-hmm. you know, and in a lot of cases, it's kind of like you're saying, okay, I agree that you're allowed to have sex with me whenever you want from now on.
I know,
you
know? Isn't that a weird
That's
one?
It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. it's like we lose control over our own bodies when we make those agreements, you
mm-hmm.
know. I mean, in my mm-hmm. opinion, you can't ever make an agreement forever because the only thing that's constant is change.
Right,
you know? And,
yeah.
And so, I mean, you got to every single day be revamping that decision and
right.
choice and revisiting it with your partner and be like, how do you feel today? You know, are
is
we still into this
now? Yes.
Or should we go somewhere else?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, when you're really present with what's really happening right now, you're going to have so much of a better experience and be more excited with the people that you're with and
Absolutely.
With yourself
Absolutely.
and everything. I mean, it's just,
yeah, I can think of a few instances. I mean, I grew up pretty much scared of everything and pretty prudish for the most part. I mean, I was
not that there's anything wrong with that, prudishness.
Nothing wrong. But I mean, in general, maybe there's a better term to use.
No, I like
it. Meant that,
I claim it, actually.
I was a late bloomer to some degrees and was very shy about most things, probably because the messages that I was receiving as a child was, you know, the typical double standard. You know, it's like
mm-hmm.
we're not supposed to be out there having sex with whoever we
You're
want.
You're not supposed
you know?
To be sexual,
right.
but you should be
but
sexy.
But yet they still want you to, yeah,
you
exactly.
should be attractive, otherwise it's not ladylike.
Right, and if you're not sexy, you're not going to get a boyfriend. But
right,
you know.
And then you're going to be alone, which is the worst thing ever.
Yeah, but some of the messages from men are even more perplexing to me. But like, I had a friend who grew up in this Catholic Italian household, and his dad kept telling him, "You got to sow your wild oats. You gotta have
Whether
sex with all
really
these women." But you know, if you have sex with these women, they're horrors.
Right.
Exactly.
Like you got to say, you know, your wife will not be one of these women that you'll sow your wild oats with. You'll save yourself for her for marriage. And it really, I just, when I heard it, I just said, this makes no sense at all, and I don't understand it. It does, and it's beyond even double standard. Like, you know, how are we supposed to know which type of woman is which, and you know, how are you supposed? It set up all these categories that really
if she
really
has sex
bug
with
me.
You willingly, then she's trouble.
Yeah, it's kind of like that,
she's
and
a dirty girl,
and
but
it kind of messed with.
Who doesn't want a dirty girl?
Right. Well, that's the thing. I
but
mean,
they
if
won't
you really
take you
like
home to mama.
Right.
We're the secret on the side.
Yeah.
Oh man,
so
that double standard is just it's Bone crushing.
Yeah.
I've got another one. One of the things, I read a small piece in here, I especially love the way so many cultures require women to be covered up, even their faces, and whatever the offered explanation, it's basically saying that if men see us, they will feel a need to rape us. And it would be
right.
Because our own bodies are a temptation, and rather than make the men responsible for quelling their desires, the women are the ones who have to take responsibility for their own safety.
Right.
Which tells us if we are not covered up, then we are responsible for whatever happens to us because we were warned.
I mean, why wouldn't you be able to just say, hey, you know, just because you can see some part of my body, and probably your ankles in some country is like the ankles are too much sexual temptation. Just because why can't you just say no in the moment and then have your no respected?
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone's not going to respect your no, that's about power. You know, that's not about, you know, sexual desire. I mean, you can still have sexual desire. I mean, go masturbate, you know,
totally.
Just because you have an erection doesn't mean you have to do something with it. Why not just enjoy the sexual pleasure coursing through your body? You know?
Some of my most exciting sexual moments have been completely alone.
Exactly. Me too. Exactly. Because then you're really empowered. You're like, hey, this feels good because I'm hot.
Totally.
I mean,
and that's the key right there.
Right.
That you know that you're hot.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't. Most people
right.
don't know that. And they go through their lives filled with this fear that they're never going to find the person who's going to make them happy and complete them and
mm-hmm.
all this stuff. But you have to be completely whole all by yourself, you
mm-hmm.
know, and to be like, be able to look in that mirror and say, damn, she's hot, you know? I'd be like,
right.
I do her.
Right. And your sexual pleasure is you generating that sexual pleasure. Like, even when you have sex with a partner, it's not your partner making you feel something. You're making your own sensations. You're creating that arousal. So
and it's the truth about
own it.
All parts of happiness. I think we need to take a lot more personal responsibility in general, you know, of our own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny. I heard one of the earlier people say something about how people might find it offensive. Tallulah, I think, was talking about her video.
Yeah, female ejaculation
like, it feels
is offensive.
To me like
yeah.
people these days feel like they're entitled to an inalienable right to not be offended.
Right.
And I'm like, no, you don't.
Right.
And not let anyone else be offended either.
You don't
either.
Have a right,
right
to it, but you can certainly choose not to be offended.
Easily,
yeah.
yes.
You know?
Very
I mean,
easily.
I heard that the Tea Party is against masturbation.
Yeah, there's one. There's
what
a lady that's
that?
All that. That's one of her big platforms.
All right, the masturbation, please.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
stop touching yourself.
She says that it's because Jesus said that means you're lusting in your heart, and then lusting in your heart is wrong. Although I don't think really it was Jesus that said that. And really, what's wrong with lusting in your heart, really?
I don't remember that. I actually read the New Testament. I don't remember it. Anything
sure.
along those lines. And Jesus was hanging out with prostitutes and
Mary Magdalene, that's
and
right.
And sick people. He wasn't hanging out with the pious people.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
let's
we
not
say
get
that's
started
dumb.
On that
yes.
road.
So back to your book, Soul Laundering. We're talking now with Ishtar Rising. You're obsessed with the rape and murder of this relative. What did you find out about this story?
Part of the reason I was obsessed with it was I was watching how 50 plus years after it happened, it was still damaging people
mm-hmm.
in the family. It was just
mm-hmm.
like this plague spreading out and being, you know, replicated. So a lot of what I was doing at the beginning was to sort of try and come to some kind of feeling of the family lineage, per se.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out later as I was writing it that I realized, oh, this is why I'm writing this book. I have this own experience that I had sort of brushed under the table myself and
mm-hmm.
you know acted like it wasn't really affecting me.
There's this idea I think that being raped and you mentioned this that being raped is like something worse than death or
oh, yeah.
you talked about a girl who said, you know, don't worry mother, I will never get raped because he would kill me first.
He'd have to kill me first.
Right. And
right.
so she's stabbed 14 times, but she dies a virgin.
And everyone thinks that that's the best way.
That's the best thing.
Yeah. It would be better for her to die than to live with this stain.
Right. I've heard that so many times. Being raped is worse than death. And as an adolescent, I think we kind of get this idea about rape and then we kind of get fascinated with it. I was fascinated with it too. And I didn't have the same, you know, story.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, being raped would be worse than death. And like imagining how it could happen to me. And of course I would be afraid at night walking, which is another way of being victimized is always living in fear. But then also like, as I'm imagining this happening and it would be worse than death. But then as a rape survivor, it's another thing to feel like, oh, I wished I would have died, you know, like to also take that on. It's just, I mean, really the best thing is to live through it and then heal.
Absolutely.
Right?
And I mean, the...
it's not worse than death.
It's not worse than death, no.
And, not that and when death you, when is you're so in that bad, situation, yeah.
And you're faced with a culture that's telling you that that is probably the case, and you're like, mm-hmm. No, it's not.
Right.
I don't want to die. What are
right.
you talking about?
Exactly.
I want to live. I'm okay with this.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's. I had kind of an amazing experience. Writing the book was a hugely cathartic experience
I
for
bet.
Me in general. And I thought, okay, it's done now. Woohoo! And
right.
I'm off. And so I went into the jungle and was working with some shaman with ayahuasca. And mm. it's an amazing medicine teacher. In a vision that I had, I was basically being shown some other lesson. But in the process of it, there was like a beam of light being shot through me. And it came up through all of the chakras. And so it was like something coming into me, and it was
right.
Invasive, and I got a little freaked out, and I was kind of like, what is this? And like when the medicine comes, it feels like someone's talking to you sometimes or whatever, and the experience, like she caught this feeling immediately, and she grabbed onto it, and she's like, well, what's wrong with that? So she starts poking me and prodding me and sticking things inside me, like, what's wrong with this? What's wrong with this? It was like she's saying, you know, your body is your body. It's just a piece. It has nothing to do with your identity or all this. I mean, it does have to do with your identity, but it's not the soul. You know, I mean, there's a separation there. And if something physical happens to this body, there's no value judgment attached to that action happening to your body, that you actually are creating all of that. You
so
know,
you're
the stain
creating
is
the
inside
value.
Your own mind. You
right.
know, there is nothing changed. Why? What? Since... Okay, just because I didn't agree to have sex with that person, all that really happened was...
He still should have listened to what you
absolutely,
wanted.
Absolutely, I'm just saying that, like,
but
for
you,
me, in order to
you
heal
could
from
let
all of
go
this, the best
of,
thing for me to do
mm-hmm.
was to separate myself entirely from the person involved
mm-hmm.
and realize that I can remove all of the pain. The only thing keeping me in this negative space is me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you yeah. still can't harm me, even though you do all of these different
absolutely.
Things to my body.
Absolutely.
You still can't touch the being that is you, the light, the experience.
Unless they kill you.
Right, unless they kill you, and then it's sort of like, well, maybe there's something else, and we hope so.
But that's a different story. I mean, there's rape and there's murder, and those are two completely different things that sometimes happen at the same time.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But as far as a rape is concerned, I mean, we can. It's a horrible thing that happens, and we can choose to continue to be ruled by it forever, or we
right?
can choose
and
to
be re-victimized
exactly.
again and again every time you go there, every
mm-hmm.
time you let it, you know, shut you down, and you know, you don't let yourself be alone at night, you don't let yourself walk outside, you don't let yourself be a sexual person that can say yes and no
mm-hmm.
to situations,
mm-hmm.
you know, it can really shut you down.
I think it's really the violence that's even more than the action that really has the lingering difficult effect, because I've never been in a rape situation, but I have been in a situation that wasn't quite as intense, where I was encouraged to do something intimate that I didn't want to do. And I basically said no, and the person wouldn't take no for an answer, and then I went ahead and did it anyway. And what really lingered with me is this kind of feeling that I don't know, that I was disempowered, and the feeling of shame that I didn't stand up for myself, and that's that goes way beyond the actual physical what actually happened physically between us. And, you know, that was really not even that interesting. Or, you know, not very much happened. It was we weren't even naked or anything. So there was not even penetration or anything like that. There wasn't that kind of intimacy. But the feeling of being violated
mm-hmm.
really, it still kind of haunts me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of that situation, I have this knee-jerk tendency to go right back to that space and feel those feelings
space.
All
mm-hmm.
over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to not... To try to disengage that knee-jerk response, I find. And
mm-hmm.
and that wasn't even a full-on, really violent, horrible,
mm-hmm.
traumatic rape experience in a lot of ways. Not to, you know, put value judgments on it.
Right,
for
not
me,
just
it was
create
really
a
it's funny
hierarchy.
That you say that, because
but
there's a section here where I was talking about my rape as compared to other rape
right,
victims.
Right, like there's a better or
right.
worse rape.
Right.
Totally. Yeah, there's a hierarchy of rape. This one was a really bad one.
I was like, I feel like a poser. I feel
right,
like my
yeah.
rape wasn't violent
wasn't
enough
even
to be considered
good enough,
a real
yeah.
rape.
I know.
I don't
rate
a membership
about?
In the Rape Survivors Club.
Yeah, well,
I know exactly how you feel.
And then because, being a man too, it's like, you know, I
awful.
You know, men can't be raped.
Well,
so
I can.
So that's, you know, I'm kind of dealing with that too,
right.
And when I confronted the person with that, she just was completely, she just didn't take it seriously at all, and basically acted like I was crazy or overreacting, mm-hmm. It just made things so much worse.
Right. Well, you really have to just not buy into that other person's trip. Do you know what I mean? Like, people are wounded, and they're wounded big time. And sometimes, you know, people will victimize again and again out of their own wounding. And as long as you cannot take on any of their wounding, you know, as long as you can say that wasn't about me, mm-hmm. it wasn't my fault, the way they were before they got to me was not my fault. You know, and so many complex and probably awful things have happened to that person to make them that way. And, you know, it's really hard to exist in a universe where that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But we do. And just to be like, okay, can I make the most fun experience for myself now in the future? Yes. How do I do that? You know, and keep existing in that is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so what really brought you from, I mean, an experience of sexuality that was about, you know, rape and protecting from rape and being constantly vigilant and being constantly afraid to, I just feel, I could be wrong, that you're really in a place of freedom and expressive sexuality and joy and sensuality. Like, what got you from this place of being a prude who was always worried about being raped?
I wouldn't say I was always afraid of it. I was obsessed with what happened to her because
mm-hmm.
it was this crazy secret mystery.
Mm-hmm.
I was obsessed in general about the idea, I think. But I think in a lot of ways, for me growing up, I had a lot of ideas about, it wasn't my ideas. I was at the age of like 13 blossoming into this like, wow, I want to do mm-hmm. everybody.
Right,
you
yeah.
know? But
so much
everything else in
hormones
my world
going on
was
at 13.
Saying no, mm-hmm. no, not good little girls
don't do that.
And I was so afraid of not fitting in or not, you know, being thought of as a good little girl that I would do everything in my power to do whatever everyone wanted me to do. And that was really bad in a lot of ways because not only was I doing what parents and adults and people wanted me to do, I was doing what anybody wanted me to do.
Right.
You know, and in a lot of situations at the age of 13, when I blossomed in physical ways too, suddenly I had adults, teachers, all kinds of people paying a lot of
right.
attention to me.
And you were really vulnerable.
Yeah. And I wanted to be able to explore my sexuality, but I didn't feel like I was allowed to. And so in some weird way, in some twisted way in my mind, the idea of being raped almost became a fantasy because then I could have the sexual experience I wanted,
but it wasn't my fault.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I've
That's
heard that a
twisted.
Lot. Well, it's interesting. And I feel like as long as it's a fantasy,
mm-hmm.
like as long as a rape fantasy is a fantasy, it's fine. You know, as long as you're saying yes, I'm saying yes, and he's saying yes, and we're both saying yes, and you say, okay, now, yes, I'm going to say no, and I'm going to mean yes, but we've actually explicitly had this conversation. It's not the weird adolescent game where he's saying, I think no means yes, and she's saying no, and really means kind of no, and actually, I'm feeling really yucky about this, but I'm kind of turned on, but I really mean no, and he's like, no means yes, but not that kind of game, no.
Right.
The real one where you actually talk about it in advance and say, no means yes game. It's a really fun game, because it creates a lot of polarity,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? So you have a lot of action and drama, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, no, but you actually mean yes, yes, yes. It's really a good game. It's a fun game. I love that game myself. But as long as it's a game, you know, and
mm-hmm.
as long as both people are really getting what they want,
mm-hmm.
you know, and really experiencing pleasure, even if it accidentally hurts because you bonk someone's head in the noggin while you're fighting them or whatever. I mean, it's okay as long as, you know, everybody's winning, as long as everyone's really getting what they want.
Sure, for sure.
Yeah.
And I would say as far as what changed, I think that like most people in our culture, we kind of grow up with this whole idea, you know, that you complete me.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Because I'm only half
right.
a shell of a
I'm
person without you. Don't leave.
Exactly. And it's
I
it's
still
like
haven't seen that movie.
Oh, really?
I'm scared to
that,
see
that
it.
That was the most important part. So.
Yeah.
Basically, I think that our entire world view of relationships is based on fear,
mm-hmm.
which is completely the opposite of what it should be.
Right. It should be based on love, maybe.
That would be a good start.
It'd be
good.
Trust.
Yeah. Something good.
Self-awareness.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah.
So I think that for the most part, people come into relationship in general with this idea that there's only so much of this love stuff out there. Mm. And so we got to
put it in our basket.
Hold on to it. Tie it to us. Chain it down. Make sure it doesn't leave, because it's the only way we can be whole is to have this. And, you know, once you find someone who you feel like completes you, you're like, oh, my God, they're mine. I must have them. I went through a numerous long-term relationships. I was a serial monogamist for years. You know,
Yes, that's a very acceptable way of doing relationships.
Exactly. And they were amazing relationships, each time growing more with new people. But I hadn't ever really figured out who I was. You know, like I was so still so worried about making sure that people always liked me, that that I would be the chameleon and turn into whatever they wanted or needed, and that's pretty much how I lived my whole life into my 30s, you know, and so it took a year of choosing not to be in relationship with anyone after the last real relationship, just being able to see whoever I wanted. It was not like I was abstaining or anything. It was just no commitment, no moving in with people, no continuous day-to-day seeing you all the time kind of stuff.
No pair bonded.
Exactly. And during that time, I started to really explore the things that I was interested in, the things that I wanted to be, who I
what
was.
Do I
everything
want?
I like. You know? And the more I realized that my whole life, I've been in love with lots and lots of people all at the same time. And we weren't allowed to have that. And I'm like, well, why not?
Why not?
Just because someone else said so.
Well, you know, if you can't pass down the belongings in a really organized way, you can't control the society as well. So we have to make sure that the seed does a particular thing, so you can't have sex with anyone.
Exactly.
Except for one person.
You control the population.
Right, yeah. And you have to get a license.
Exactly.
And breaking out of that.
Yeah.
How's that working for you?
It's working good.
Yeah, I bet.
I think the last, I don't know, I went through a period of, you know, dating lots of people and just seeing what it was like. While I was like 33, I think, was when I first started that. That was like the first time I'd ever really dated people. And that was fun, you know, and I met a lot of amazing people. I had some real issues with being able to have a sort of casual sexual relationship, though, because I had always equated relationship
sex and love
and sex, you know, like they went together hand in hand. And so,
and if you don't love the person forever, then you're a slut if you have sex with them.
Exactly.
It's really it's tricky. I know.
But,
I had
but then
that
I mean,
problem.
I was having the same problem also in that I would try to experiment and see if I could have sex with people that I wasn't planning to stay
have a
with,
relationship with.
You know?
Yeah.
What I found after a lot of experimentation was that if it was just somebody that was hot and like sexy and I liked him a little bit, but like there wasn't much more connection than that, then it generally didn't work. I'm just not pleasured by that.
Right. It wasn't
no
the greatest
human
thing.
Connection at all.
Right.
I might as well just be.
You might as well do it with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, whatever. Have fun. Tell me when you're done.
Right.
You know, but if I could find someone who was amazing, who had a beautiful light that I could connect with, and we could, as I said before, fall in love for the moment, you know, then I could have a beautiful experience thinking about right now, you know, and not worry about what the future would bring. Let it just come to pass as it would. And eventually I got to a point where I was like, you know, I kind of remember when I used to have long-term relationships where people knew me really well, and I kind of missed that. I'm like, well, I don't know if I want to go back to that. I was like, well, it just needs a little revamping. You know, our idea of a committed relationship is all wrong. You know, it's not about binding people to you. It's about having someone that you love unconditionally. You know,
right.
That you can,
and
you
know
share
them well.
And grow, and you get to know each other's bodies to the point where, you know, giving and receiving kind of feel like the same thing, you know, because it's, you enjoy it just as much.
Well, I love what you say about, there's this character who has a best friend whose name is Charlie. And she finds like someone who's, because especially, and this is a travel book, so when you're traveling, it's hard to have a connection that lasts a long time. But it is, I mean, even when it's casual sex, it's not casual, really. I mean, you're exchanging germs with this person. You're exchanging desires with this person. I mean, sex is kind of intense. I mean, you're putting mucous membranes inside of other mucous membranes and then jostling them around very vigorously with a lot of energy flowing around and some goop. I mean, it's intense. And it's happening with, you know, our root chakra, which is about our sense of belonging. And, you know, it's very pleasurable and can be very painful. And I mean, it's some sexist, some serious stuff. Even when it's casual, it's not that casual.
You probably ought to be comfortable with the person you're having it with.
You probably ought to think that they're okay.
And maybe you should be able to communicate and have conversations about stuff and
totally
have honesty and things like that.
Totally. So even if it's this woman's friend's name was Charlie, even if it's just your friend for the moment, you know, even if it's just your friend Charlie for the moment, you know, even I love this idea of falling in love with that person just for today. Mm-hmm. And you can, like, continue to love them. It's just that now you're in a different zip code,
mm-hmm.
you
exactly.
know. But you really love them for that moment because it's some serious stuff, that intimacy, you know.
Yeah, and some of my greatest crushes lasted no more than a day. and I still savor them in a weird way. Mm-hmm. And they weren't necessarily, they didn't. The other person didn't even know about them necessarily, mm-hmm. and that can be fulfilling on some level.
Absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, that's one of the things we talked about earlier. The idea, like right now, I'm in a relationship with someone who is, I would call my primary partner, I suppose. Mm-hmm. We don't like to label things, but I live with him a good portion out of the year. No hierarchy, but we absolutely adore each other, mm-hmm. and. Probably would, if we were in the same location all the time, would be completely happy being just with each other all the time. There's no feeling of lack or anything. But because we honor and respect each other, and it's my opinion that each of us on this earth should be able to go through your life and experience every new interaction and situation completely authentically with your first reaction feelings. You don't have to act on your first reaction, but to be able to experience that first reaction, however it
and
turns out.
And honor it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So if I meet someone and I'm like, wow, you're amazing. All I want to do is just get deep into you right now for mm-hmm. a little while and see where it goes. You know, you don't have to be like, okay, I'm not going to marry you, but like, let's see. You know, and to be able to experience that, I mean, I think if anything, the world needs more intimacy.
Right.
We don't have to have mm-hmm. it with just one person, you know? I mean, to have those close connections, you may meet someone, have that deep connection, maybe have a sexual encounter, and then you might not see them again for 10 years, but you could still talk on Facebook and have this intimate relationship with them and be, like, closer because of it.
Right.
And you may never want to have sex again because you've moved on, you know? But you mm-hmm. might. You know, who knows?
Right.
There's nothing wrong if you come back and see each other again a few years later and be like, hey, what's up?
Right, exactly. <You know? laughs> Right. And then you really have like these relationships over time where it is about each individual new moment and you can be your authentic self. Like you can travel, you can do your work, you can be who you really are mm-hmm. and you're not tying yourself to any one particular person or place or, you know what I mean? You can really be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think too, you can eventually, if you want to, tie yourself to a particular person for a while, but I mean like, you don't have to, I guess that's not even the right word.
That shouldn't be the rule, you know, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, like, you can be in a committed relationship with somebody and still have everything else, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you trust each other and you're honest and you're open about your feelings and you're willing to give each other that freedom, then you get to have everything you want and your cake, too. You know,
right.
It's like there is no loss as long as you're constantly communicating and making sure that you're daily talking about where you're at with everything and everything's still okay and do we need to shift our things around a little bit and just being aware and attentive when you're introducing new situations. My current partner recently got to meet basically all of my other lovers.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah. At Burning Man.
Hey. Yeah, that's fun. Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome because now there's
yeah, it
nothing
doesn't
left.
Have to be weird and
it
jealous.
It doesn't have to be weird at all. Everybody knows everybody, and it's all beautiful. And if you think about it, if you're so into this person,
mm-hmm.
then the people that they like, you're probably going to be into too.
So, right, exactly.
You know, that could always lead to more fun.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Exactly, exactly. Thank yeah. you so much for coming on Sexploration with Monica. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I do want to make sure people know how to get a copy of your book, Soul Laundering. Soul Laundering, S-O-U-L, and then laundering as in transformation.
Like money laundering.
Excellent. Good, good, good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Ishtar. I really had a wonderful time.
Thank you.
Yeah. And our token straight guy tonight has been the rock and roll nurse.
Yes.
Blang. Thank you so much for coming on Sexploration with Monica.